Are you a clinician in primary care who wishes there were better resources to help you understand how to navigate the concept of triage in modern general practice? We'll boost your triage skills with our dynamic 5-session live webinar course tailored for primary care clinicians. Led by myself and Dr. Ed Pooley from Difficult Conversations, this comprehensive training covers all facets of remote patient triage, whether that be digital, on-call, or other opportunities. Through this course, you'll gain practical knowledge, exclusive hints and tips, and direct access to myself and Ed through open Q&A sessions of the course. Elevate your ability to manage primary care challenges effectively and confidently, and most importantly, safely. Register now to transform your triage approach at bit.ly/GP triage course, the GP in capitals, and we will definitely catch you then.
What is a GP assistant? How is it different from a medical assistant and a physician's associate? And what is involved in the whole supervision training? And more importantly, how can they help you in general practice? I don't know, but I'm going to help you find out with a little help from our guests. So let's take an answer to primary care and learning. So, GP learners, I'm joined here by Katie and Steve. I'm going to be talking about GP assistants. If I can let them introduce themselves first of all, because that's always more useful than me doing it. So, Katie, do you want to start off for us?
Yeah, my name's Katie Power. First and foremostly, I'm a business manager in general practice. And with my other hat on, I lead on the training hub for Cheshire and Merseyside.
Cool. And Steve?
Yeah, so I'm Steve Cox. I'm a GP in sunny St Helens on Merseyside in a sort of deep end practice partnership covering about 30,000 patients. I've been a GP in St Helens for about 30 years now. It's my 30th year as a partner. And I also do work at the moment for the University of Chester.
Awesome. Thank you for that. So I know we're talking about GP assistants, and this is obviously one of the newer available roles on the additional roles reimbursement scheme and stuff. And I guess lots of people are kind of curious to know what it is, what they can do, and yeah, that kind of stuff. So can you just fill us in a little bit about GP assistants from your perspective and you know, what are they, basically?
Okay. So in about 2016, Health Education England were looking at why GPs were exiting the profession in their sort of mid-50s. And they were trying to think, is there anything we can do to reverse the exit? And you might say, well, not much has happened since. But one of the things that they looked at was the key things across the northwest of England that impacted on GP levels of stress and frustration with work and things that basically pushed them out of the door. And the admin load was one of the key things that were highlighted by a review done in 2016. So Health Education England Northwest commissioned a piece of work to design a program to help produce a key worker, if you like, to support GPs with their workload. And the GPA program was born from that. We won a commission, if you like, a contract to design the program and also to deliver the first wave initially. So thinking about what a GPA is, so a GP assistant is a bit of a cross, if you like, between a personal assistant to the GP and also a healthcare assistant with bells on, if you like. So if you look at the first part, the personal assistant part, that would be someone who would help the GP with key admin, such as PMA forms, IB113 forms, maybe referral forms, echo request forms, things like that. And then the second part would be helping the GP get ready to examine patients, maybe take initial obs off a patient in one room while the GP sees another in a different room. Do things like ECGs, spiros, that kind of stuff. And the kind of things that help take a bit of weight actually off the GP, but also off practice nurses to a degree. And very much the GPA is paired with the GP rather than working as a healthcare assistant who tend to be paired with practice nurses. And I think that was the key part of the role. The program works on an e-portfolio, which is a City and Guilds Learning Assistant program, and it covers five domains, two of which are clinical and three are administrative. One of them is the care domain, which is the equivalent of the care certificate. It's a transferable qualification, and it's externally validated by the University of Chester, and the support for the portfolio is facilitated basically by Cisco, and that's not the same as Cisco who make the phones. This is Cisco, the training company based in Liverpool. Mm-hmm. I think from the way we see it, the GPAs can make a really significant difference to clinical teams. So in our partnership, we've got, I think, four at the moment. And three of those at the moment are actually transitioning along the way to becoming nurse associates and ultimately nurses. But they could take pathways to other types of clinical workers if they wish. And the only other thing I was going to say was, where do they come from? And the answer was any primary care based roles, such as receptionists, even HCAs, can go through the training program, which currently runs at about 9 months.
Okay. And in terms of, I guess, how that role will work, you mentioned obviously the training scheme and stuff. How many people does that currently produce and stuff? Because obviously now that it's available through the ARS funding, there's potentially a lot of places that are looking at having GP assistants. I mean, there's almost something like 1,000 networks or something across the country. So yeah, we're talking potentially significant numbers. If there's, you know, I guess I'm looking at throughput and stuff.
All we can probably speak on is our process, which Steve's already alluded to, in terms of having the web-based portal to store evidence that is internally and externally verified. Predominantly, the practice will steer the GPA through their learning journey. Mm-hmm. But it is externally verified by us as a training hub, and again, by the University of Chester. I'm not aware of the process NHS England are looking to take. Okay. They are interested in the framework and sharing the framework. Mm-hmm. So I can comment on that throughput so far. So we've had 3 pilot waves, which Steve and myself managed for the Northwest, and that was adopted nationally. So as you probably know, this is our version of the GPA is in all but one training hub. Mm-hmm. And that training hub opted for more of an admin based role. The current process is really robust.
Yeah, I think over 500 nationally so far is the figure. I think from our point of view, the key thing we're keen on is the external verification and the transferable nature of the qualification. So if move to another practice, they can, and they've got that badge which says, look, I've been externally validated and I kind of know what I'm doing, rather than someone just going along saying, well, yes, I'm a GPA, but actually I can't prove it. And sure. I think that seems quite positive. I mean, just talking about the roles themselves, I mean, giving you an example of how they can be implemented, Katie, I'm sure, go into this in detail, but I'm duty doctor today. This morning I've been working alongside 2 GPAs. They've helped me with a lot of patients and quite a lot of the next steps for patients, like booking echoes for me and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it definitely takes pressure off when you're working as a duty doctor, for example. But I'm sure Katie will talk a bit more about.
Well, just before we get to Katie, then can I get a bit more detail on your experience, Steve? Because I can appreciate, you know, they're going to be GPs watching this and thinking, I still don't quite know how that would work in my practice. Can you give us, I guess, an idea of how that works in parallel, specifically the structure, the kind of like organisation and stuff, if that's okay?
Yeah, sure. So they're timetabled similarly to any clinician would be on EMIS, and they have a lot of free slots to if they're working alongside the duty doctor, so that the duty doctor can slot someone in with them if needs be, so that they could do preliminary obs or subsequent tasks following seeing somebody. They're obviously available for things like chaperoning and stuff like that. But I think about half of their job is admin based. So for example, the other things that they can do is they can look at normal labs and take those out of lab links for you. They can review hospital letters. They are also trained to be summarizers, by the way, although some practices have very robust summarization processes. I understand that, but they are also to do that, so they can take on some of the more complicated summarizing cases which perhaps a standard summarizer might not manage. But broadly, the clinical support is also very, very helpful.
Okay. And Steve mentioned about how they may function with the practice itself. Can you give us a bit more detail in terms of how that works with the wider team and stuff?
So the kind of examples that we've had back in terms of feedback and case studies have been really, really varied. The most successful case studies have been where practice have aligned the GPA to a GP or to the GP team. However, conversely, the nursing team have really benefited from the GPA. Steve's already mentioned the fact that we've got several nurse associates within the SPINNY group, and we've got three other candidates who are also going through the TNA route. And that's because it's currently graded at a level four, so they have that stepping stone into that foundation degree. So we've seen more and more practices actually go down that route with the GPA. The GPA supporting the practice from an administral perspective has, I would say, borne quite a lot of fruit. So that's an area that's been really, really grey historically. So having somebody that can really strip back the admin burden for the GP has been quite profound. So predominantly around reports, non-opinions, obviously, but, you know, really pulling all that information together in readiness for the GP has been really useful. First facing their clinical post and prioritising their workload for them for the day has been really useful also. The nursing teams really seem to appreciate the role, because rather than a HCA, they're seeing things a lot more holistically. So they'll be able to liaise with the reception team that little bit more and strip back the workload for the nursing teams also.
And in terms of how they work, I guess you mentioned the admin side of things. As a GP, I mean, the admin's the stuff I hate, let's be honest, and that's probably the case for most GPs. How do you find people who want to do it?
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because the majority of us are fortunate enough to work in fairly closely knit practices and teams where we've got longevity of staff. And after a period of time in terms of career development for receptionists, there's it's almost like a glass ceiling almost there, that there's historically there's not been much else they could do if the practice manager's in post and the deputy practice manager's in post. And so this has given them an opportunity to look at something that's slightly different. And actually we've been absolutely never been short of people interested in stepping forward and taking this. We've taken it outside the NHS and had a couple of people through the programme as well who are non-NHS, and they've come from a variety of backgrounds, including banking, and that's worked okay as well. So I think receptionists, they're clearly aware of the patients, that they've got a good knowledge of the local community. They've got quite a knowledge to start with in terms of your local pathways and things like that, how referrals work in and out of your hospitals. They tend to know that. And your community services. So they're ideally placed to go through this training program. It takes roughly a day a week. A lot of the local areas through HE are offering a small bursary to the practice to cover with backfill for these staff.
Mm-hmm.
Around £2,000 previously. I'm not sure how much that is now, but it was about £2,000. And in that day where they're focusing on this, they come away from their previous role. And they do a half day actually doing the job, if you like, with GP supervision, and a half day almost like a tutorial, if you like. Depending on how the practice operates, some practices put people into this role straight away, and some people keep them in their existing role for part time. But it must be, but that's entirely down to the practice and whether the practice can afford to lose someone for the majority of their role. In our experience, if you do that and you put your neck out and try it, actually they convert much quicker and they gain confidence much, much more quickly. But I understand equally, we've seen a high number of people going through this program in the Northwest, and I understand nationally as well, who've maybe only done 2 days a week and then done 2 days a week as a bill.
So in terms of the bursary that Steve alludes to, it's £1,700 currently. It's probably worth noting that that isn't going to be part of the NHSE incentive around the ARRS roles. In terms of onboarding, we've noticed a kind of a 50-50 split between practices upskilling administration staff into the more clinical role and vice versa. So certainly from our experience, that combination of clinical and admin has been really well received, although I'm told some areas would prefer others. Do people see it as a way in to get in a HCA because the training pathway is a little bit woolly? to get a HCA? Possibly, I can't rule it out. But in our experience, the most profound case studies where they've said it's really impacted on their practice the most is where they've aligned that GP assistant to the GP team, particularly around duty surgeries.
Okay. And you mentioned supervision, Steve. Supervision is obviously one of the challenges that many practices have when it comes to any of the additional roles in particular. How much time does that supervision take, I guess, initially, and then how much does it turn into as time progresses? And I know some of that's obviously going to be individually based, but in terms of your experience over the whole, can you give us an idea on what that would look like?
I mean, if we talk about our practice, it's probably easier, but this probably echoes what other people have done. I mean, if we're a training practice, and I appreciate some of the practices who are taking this on won't be training practices, but what we tend to do is we tend to nominate one GP as a supervising GP per session or per day. And so the practice nurses who want support, the registrars who want support, the GPAs who want support would go to that person. So there's someone who's available who has a lighter workload that day in terms of clinical responsibility so that they can supervise others. Either way, the way we would see it working is that there's a one-hour tutorial in one afternoon a week. This could be at lunchtime, something like that. The GPA, whilst they have a named GP as their mentor, they actually can have practice nurse or practice manager support for the different domains in the training program. So, for example, medical records training, that kind of thing. If they're coming as a receptionist, they need very, very little training around things like confidentiality because they've done that before, and summarizing, many of them may have done that. But things like ordering forms, transferring clinical information into reports like PMA reports or IB113s, for example. Those are the kind of things that they can get support from other members of the practice. But essentially, the GP is the key person who would actually add things onto their list as well as help them when they've seen somebody. So, you know, I'll give you an example. We had a patient in yesterday who was acutely breathless. Not from a history point of view, not bad enough to go straight to A&E. They came down to the surgery. They were assessed. It looked like they got atrial fibrillation. The GPA had done the OBS. The GPA did the ECG. Yeah, it was atrial fibrillation. So that's it. That's a good example. Made the GP's job that little bit easier. The bloods were done. And it cut the time that the GP actually had to spend with the patient quite significantly. So, I mean, that's quite a kind of acute case. I appreciate that. But equally, if you think about the time it takes an elderly patient to come down the corridor, if you've got a frail patient in their 80s, it can take 5 to 10 minutes for the person to get into your room, let alone get undressed to be able to be examined. The GPA can do that for you in an adjacent room if you've got room capacity, or equally help you in your room to speed things along. And even little things like that make a difference for GPs in a working day.
Okay. And I guess from your experience, obviously your focus has been very much on GP assistants and stuff. I know there are other roles, things like medical assistants, PAs, all these, you know, there's lots of nomenclature out there and stuff. You know, where do you see they sit in comparison? Is there much difference? Are they just synonyms, or are they just different, you know, names and stuff, or something else from your experience?
In a PA is very different, isn't it? A physician's usually a science-based degree course in a previous graduate that takes place over largely 1 year in hospital and 1 year in out of hospital services. And that's an independent, relatively independent practitioner who can see patients in a similar way to an AMP once they're experienced, but not able to prescribe. Pardon me. So a medical assistant is another term or a correct term for a GPA. So a medical assistant in general practice is a GP assistant. They're the same thing.
Cool. And I guess if practices were interested in looking at the whole GP assistant role within their team and stuff, what would you suggest they do to get started?
Oh, that's a good question, because that is a little bit of a grey area at the moment. So currently we would recommend that they reach out to their training hub. Each place has a training hub. And each area will also have an overarching training hub as well. So that's what you should do in the first instance. They will in turn contact me. So I'll be able to provide them with the case studies and the literature that we already hold. Currently, in terms of next steps with the ARRS roles, we're all on hold. And the guidance from Health Education England, where this piece of work currently sits, is to just take expressions of interest and keep a list until further guidance is made available.
I've got a meeting with NHS England around this next week. I think it's next week or the week after. As we understand it, though, they're very keen for the framework to be used purely in-house verification. So the practice would be responsible for taking the candidate through the whole learning process themselves and accrediting them themselves. From our point of view, I think a transferable skill is really, really important. Transferable qualifications are important, particularly in someone's career if they want to take steps up into associate nursing or something similar. We would see that as really valuable. I'm hopeful, and I think Katie's hopeful, that the HEE scheme will continue and, if anything, expand. I think we've all seen across PCNs that some of the ARS staff often have limited supervision, and their longevity in roles can be quite low. Mm-hmm. I think one of our concerns would be that would happen to this role. These roles really flourish within a GP team rather than floating around four different practices. And I think it's really important that they have a home in one practice. That would be my big piece of advice for anyone who's interested. But we're very happy contacted to talk to people about this if you wish.
Sure. And I guess just my final question, if there were practices that actually thought, you know what, we're so keen on this, we want to get started, but we don't want to wait for the additional roles side of things, is there a route for them to do that now, or is it still just
right now, this very, very moment? I believe I have 3 licenses that I'm at liberty to use. So it would be a matter of first come, first served. Outside of that, no, everything's been put on hold until we understand the route that NHSE want to take.
Fair enough. So watch this space is basically the advice at this point. And clearly, I'm happy to share any updates that you both have with myself through the channel on the EGP Learning. And me and Andy obviously do regular updates where we disseminate as much information as general practice as we can. So if you are watching this and you want to know what the answer to that is, check out some of the future streams that we've done, and that will hopefully have the information, or it may be available in other places by then anyway, depending on when you're watching this. Thank you both of you for this time. I really appreciated it for my own learning, but also hopefully to help our colleagues out there in general practice to understand this, you know, not new, but new in some ways kind of role and stuff. And clearly, if they did want to contact you for more information, is there anyone particularly you'd recommend they do so?
Probably me.
Okay.
Well, we can have an email at the end of your...
Right. And I will put that down in the notes down below for people who are watching or listening to this. It'll be down in the descriptions of the show notes and stuff and things. And as always, we're here to help tech enhance your primary care and learning. We'll catch you in the next episode. Oh, hello there, EGP learner. I'm Dr. Gandalf, and I often get asked, what kind of resources do you have to try and help those using EMIS? Because you tend to do a lot more stuff for System 1. And often I've really struggled to answer that question because, let's be honest, I don't use EMIS on a regular basis. So therefore, trying to help EMIS users is a little bit more difficult for myself. And that really made me feel, well, not great. So I kind of did something to try and help all those EMIS users out there. I went and had a chat with one of my colleagues, Dr. Mike from GP on the Move, and him and I have created a course that you can use to help you use EMIS so much better. That's right. If you use EMIS, but you want to use it so much better, so much quicker, and in such a way that means you go home sooner, then check out our EMIS for Clinicians course. It's an online course that takes you through all the tips and tricks that Dr. Mike knows to try and basically mean you can go home quicker. That'd be a cool thing, wouldn't it? And guess what? It's currently on offer. So if you want to take advantage of this introductory offer and get access to it now, look at the links down below and check it out. Additionally, if you're a practice, network, or wide area that wants more opportunity to use it, send me an email, egplearning@gmail.com. Let's see if we can help you out. And as I like to say, tech enhance your primary care and learning. Shall we get back to it? Oh, And if you wanted one for System 1 users, well, you know I've got you covered, haven't I? Check out the Learn System 1 for Clinicians course, bit.ly/TPP S1 course.